Preston and Steve Fun Size.
We have a guest to speak to. I'm excited about this as well. Not necessarily for the reason, but I'm excited because a tribute is being paid to a man who is a huge, huge influence in my life. And some incredibly talented people are coming together to do this. Modern Drummer Magazine, which is the Bible for those who play drums like myself, have their festival 2020. And they're doing a tribute to Neil Peart. It is going to be this Saturday at 8 p.m. And obviously all this stuff is virtual, so it's not a big gathering. It's going to be people performing on their own.
But they've gotten very efficient at making these things work.
Agreed. And you can get tickets through livexlive.com. Ticket sales are going to benefit brain tumor research at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center because it was a brain tumor that took Neil Peart in January. And to the surprise of almost everyone, just a small group of people knew that he was sick. But pretty much everybody was in the dark. And that's why it was so shocking when it happened. I'm going to play a little clip of our next guest playing drums. I had the opportunity to meet him one time just for a brief moment. Super nice guy. But what a drummer. So this is a little bit of Ray playing live. He was at a demo, and this is just a short clip of him playing. Sorry, that was me. I played that by accident. I didn't realize. Oh, do I have egg on my face? I didn't know that was from one of my live performances. I lie.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Korn and many other projects, please welcome Ray Luzier to the show. Ray.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, man. How you doing, bud?
Was that sound like a big pile of drums falling down a step?
You squeeze a lot of notes in, man. Hey, real quick, I want to fanboy on you for a moment, and then we'll get to the meat of why we're talking to you today, Ray. Korn was not, it really wasn't in my wheelhouse as far as a band goes. And the first time I ever saw you play live was we had our MMRBQ festival here in Philadelphia, and you were playing with Jonathan Davis solo. And yeah. I went out to watch. We're busy during that day. We're working. We're meeting fans and doing a bunch of other things. But I want to go out and check out Jonathan because he's been here in our studio before. He's a really nice guy. We got along with him well. So I definitely wanted to see it. I watched him for just a moment. The rest of the time, I was transfixed on you. And my buddy Chuck here at the radio station, I was telling him how impressed I was with your performance. He's like, okay, you need to meet him. So he introduced me to you just real quick. You were gracious. You had got done with a show. It's not the time to really talk to a musician right after they get done with their show. But you were really, really kind. And I just want to tell you how impressed I was and now what a fan I am of you.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. It means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So I want to ask you about your Neil's influence on you. When you were coming up and you were learning your chops and when Rush came into your life and how he affected your playing.
Yeah, big time. I mean, I grew up on a big farm in out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So about 180 acres and there's nothing to do out there. So you either bale hay or play drums or ride a horse. So I didn't no one taught me anything. I was self-taught, but I would put records on. So I would put on, AC/DC, Ozzy, Kiss. And then, of course, Rush. And I just remember when I was young, probably 8 or 9, you play side one of Back in Black and then side one of Moving Pictures. And you're like, wait a minute, how come it's so much harder to play this one and not, the AC/DC? And so immediately I knew there was something special. And I didn't, know what prog is or any kind of that terminology back then. You just played. And just immediately from that, that was the first Rush record I ever got. And it just, this, took me by storm, and I was a fan ever since.
When you were going through the catalog, and I like you, would play along to the music and try to, work out the songs, what song of Rush that had you mastered and were most proud of that you can remember?
That I can remember back in the day, probably, I love that song, Red Barchetta, off of Moving Pictures.
Yeah.
Something really cool. I love the, I don't know, don't know. There's something really cool about that song. But, you know, the obvious answer for a lot of drummers is 2112 or, you know, any of the big epic, you know, 15-minute pieces. But I was always attracted just to whatever the, about the whole song, you know, and Neil's playing just spoke for itself. And just, wow, what an impact, you know.
You know, and there are people that are, it seems to be drummers in the rock world, or there's a couple of camps that you fall into. You fall into a Bonham camp. You fall into a Neil camp. It doesn't mean that you don't love both and you don't want to play like both of them, but I see people kind of side with one or the other and have mutual respect out of that as well. Neil's playing, to me, I gravitated towards that, more towards Bonham. Bonham was a god. He was just incredible. He did amazing things. But there was something about Neil's intent and the way that he played and the very specific nature of every note and how he had thought out exactly what he wanted to be a part of that song. I mean, like, he didn't just play it. He really thought hard about it.
A lot of preparation and pre-production and Rush Records, for sure.
Does that Prog Sense tends to lend itself to that, I think, that type of very precise type of performance, because there's a lot of musicians playing very specific notes together and so on. Do you find yourself as that type of player as well, or do you leave yourself a little more leeway to get creative as you're playing?
Well, I try to do both. You know, I love improvisation when I play. You know, a lot of times when I go to these drummer festivals, you know, I did one in Manchester last year. The Quebec was the year before. And that was a complete improvised solo, and sometimes that's scary, but I love being on the seat of my pants with that stuff. But that being said, when you're in a studio and you're doing a record, that record is going to outlive us all. You know, the music is going to live on when we're all dead and gone. So that's in my brain a lot too. So, you know, with the Korn 3, you Remember Who You Are record, we got back with our producer Ross Robinson, and it was completely just on the cuff, and there was no fixes. And that's hard to live with sometimes, because you make a mistake, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah.
Hey, but I also don't like the perfection records either. People are polishing stuff too much these days, and it sounds so perfect that you're like, and you watch them live, you're like, you don't sound like that, you know.
Yeah.
So,
you need to leave some room for a little bit of soul in there, you know.
Absolutely, man. We're humans. We all make mistakes daily. I make one every couple of seconds.
join the club. You know? Yeah.
Hey,
you know, you've got to be real.
Another thing about Neil Ray that I was kind of in the dark on. I took a pause from drumming for a long, long time. It has since resurfaced in my life, and I'm really happy about that. And I've been working really hard the past couple of years. But one of the things that I was not aware of is the close-knit community that drummers have, because one of the things that I saw when Neil passed away was not only, you know, your Mike Portnoy's and people like yourself who directly took a lesson or two from Neil. But I saw from people like in the jazz world, like Dave Weckl and Peter Erskine, and these guys were well aware of Neil and his impact and were friends. I thought those were different worlds and they didn't mix with each other. But there is we do formatically cross those lines simply being drummers. And do you find yourself, you know, people in other, you know, completely different formats of music have respect for each other?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one cool thing about drummers, and not saying that guitar players have more ego or anything like that, but they're always trying to kind of show each other up. At least they were back in the day when there's tons of leads. But if drummers have this, there's a bonding brotherhood amongst us. It's really weird. Like, I love going to those drummer festivals, and, you know, obviously this year's Modern Drummer one is virtual, but I love the hangs and stuff, because you meet these like specialists from, you know, South America, and you'll meet some guy that beats on tree logs in Africa, and then you got, you know, your Portnoy's and your Thomas Langs and all those guys, and then you have, you know, and it's so cool, because we go out to these dinners and we just have the most random conversations, and we're all just people, you know. We have, obviously, that's why music's so diverse. It would be boring if it was all the same, you know. There's so many. You got to be open-minded out there, you know, no matter what you're doing. If you're listening, if you're playing, you have to be an open-minded person, you know.
Right. We had Ray Parker Jr. on recently, and we were kind of ignorant to the fact that he was a really and is a very well-respected session musician. And he talked about all the instruments that he'd played, and then he found the guitar, and he actually thought he was a bad musician because he couldn't improvise. He didn't have the improvisational spark with any other instruments except the guitar.
And to us, as now Preston plays, but we're sort of neophytes with this, there has to be a moment where you realize, or there was a moment, I assume, where you realized you could express yourself through the drums and create music in the moment. Do you recall that moment?
Yeah, I mean, well, when I left Pittsburgh, I went to L.A. to join, to go to that school, Musicians Institute.
Oh, yeah.
And I went there, and I ended up teaching there in 92 off and on around tours when I was with David Lee Roth and a couple other national bands I was playing with. But they kind of force you to get up on stage with a mic drum kit, and they're always like, express yourself. You know, what do you have to say? Don't just, it's okay to mimic your idols. It's okay to... look up to people, but find yourself too, and that was a really turning point for me, is teaching there more than being a student there, because I would watch people from all over the world play. And I was like, it all kind of came together in your head of like, oh, if I just do this and I relax and I don't let my nerves get the best of me, just, speak truly what comes through me, which is all the vast amount of music I grew up listening to. It all comes through you.
That's got
to
be cool. That's got to be the thing that I'm not. It's a rare gift to have, because it seems the purest form of. I mean, I'll do improvisational comedy, which is I guess a variation on that. But to be that spontaneous and just have it flow through has got to be something magical.
Yeah, it is. It's really unique, and the one thing is, you never ever master, or you never get close to being where you want to be. That's what's cool about what we do. I just turned 50 not long ago, and I'm like, I feel like I have light years to go. Just in the, there's no plateau you hit, and if I always tell musicians, if you hit that plateau, you should probably go do something else, go to law school or something.
Yeah, I was at a clinic one time with Dave Weckl, and you guys don't know who he is, but Ray does, and he's probably one of the greatest to ever pick up a pair of sticks. And there was a Q&A, and I said, so do you think you'll get any better than you are? I asked a dumb question like that. He's listening to me, goes like, I hope I will be better than I am now. So everybody always wants to improve. Listen, there's a lot of big names on this, and these festivals always have them, but paying tribute to Neil will be Stuart Copeland, Carmen Appice, Greg Bissonette, Taylor Hawkins, Chad Smith, Steve Smith, Kenny Aronoff, Mike Portnoy. And I guess people are going to prepare solos. In fact, I've been following on social media Brian Tichy, who's a great drummer, and he's more of a Bonham guy, but he is he's toiling over putting together a proper solo to pay homage to Neil. What is going to be your take on what you're going to play? Are you going to incorporate any signature elements of Neil, or are you just going to go up there and throw something out?
I did this weird guitar solo. I'm doing this two-hand tapping thing. It's really cool. Now, I messed you all up, didn't I?
Yeah, took a totally different direction.
Well, Tishy texted me the other day. He's like, man, what'd you do for your solo? And I'm like, what solo? I ain't doing no, there's no way, man. And, there's some big boys on that thing, And I go, I actually did a medley, a really quick two-song medley of Korn and KXM, my side band with George Lynch and Doug Pinnick. So I didn't even, I just did a, it's definitely Neil-influenced, but I just did my thing to music like I like to do, So,
okay.
But the cool thing is my interview, we're to say words about what Neil did to us and how he influenced our lives. And I thought the ultimate, Nick Raskulinix, he produced the last two Korn records, and he did the last two Rush records. And he got so close to Neil, those last two records. And the studio bond's a totally different thing. So I actually said, I'm driving to Rock Falcon, which is 20 minutes from my house in Nashville. And I said, Nick, I'm going to sit down with you. He's doing the Evanescence record right now. And I go, tell Amy Lee to go in the back room for 10 minutes. I'm going to talk to you. And we did. We sat there and I said, just tell me about Neil. And he gave me chills, man. He brought out a pair of sticks, one of Neil's, the last songs he recorded ever. And dude, you talk about goosebumps on top of goosebumps. I was like, you'll see the interview. I'm like, I literally gasping. I stuttering my words because it was just like, what the heck, So yeah, it was pretty. So I love my interview part. That's for sure.
Did you ever cross paths with Neil in your years?
I did. Yes. He did. I judged a drum off, Guitar Center drum off in Los Angeles quite some time ago, probably 6-7 years ago. And there was a backstage area, of course. The Sabian guy, Chris Stanky, is a good friend of mine, came out and goes, hey, man, do you want to meet the man? I go, I just met Peter Chris.
And he goes, I go, is that the man? Because I thought it was. Cause, yeah. You know, and he goes, no, dude, come on. He goes, Neil's back in this little booth back here, but he's kind of hiding out. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, I go, yeah, of course I want to. And I just went up to him and I said straight up, I go, thank you, professor, for everything. And he goes, you play for Korn, right? I go, yeah. He goes, yeah, that's an aggressive band. You have to have a lot of energy for that. And we were just talking very small talk, but man, it's a moment I'll never forget. You know?
That's amazing, man. Yeah. Listen, I wanted to say, Ray, as I had, you know, saw you with Jonathan Davis, and one of the reasons that I was transfixed on you is you're a very kinetic player. You're a very showy player. You put a lot in between of the movements of what you're doing, and I'm talking about stick tosses and all that other stuff, which I was surprised to hear you say that you're self-taught, because I thought you might have been like a drumline guy or something like that.
Well, you know, I played stacks of records for years and years, but when I did get into high school, I did join Marching Corps, but it was the, you know, freaking Amish pig farmers.
The local high school. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't, you weren't on the Blue Devils, right?
No, yeah. No. It was like, I mean, not in the sticks, you know, but I mean, we, you know, from back then, you think it's every. So I joined the jazz, the symphonic concert band. But so, of course, I learned, you know, I watched a lot of those things and was trying to get the drum line to do more fancier stuff. And, you know, through the years and, you know, a bunch of failed original bands, when I joined David Lee Roth's band in 97, he's always the one that was like, Luzier, you know, put on a show back there. Don't make that waiting for the bus look on your face, you know. And so Dave taught me a lot about showbiz, and I incorporated all that marching stuff, you know, through the years. He's always like, people are paying money to see you lose ear. So it was like, I would, you know, sorry, I have to do the Dave when I talk about Dave. But it's like, you know, so that's, thank you for noticing that. I try not to be a, you know, showboat, or I don't want to be a ham back there, but I do want to, when you're live, I believe in giving people a show. I don't like that whole, you know, the drummer's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Wait for the bus. Look, you know, give me a show. I paid money to see, you know, so that's what I do.
You and Greg Bissonette both played for Dave. Do you guys reminisce about those days?
We do. There's a ton. You're going to want to read my book one day. I'm putting together this rock book about, like, it's not about like, oh, Mr. Rockstar guy. It's about, you know, getting signed, getting dropped, you know, getting promised this, getting, and then me joining national bands. But 50% of my book's David Lee Roth, because it's just 8 years with that guy. You can't make that stuff up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love him to death. He's the most amazing, one of the best entertainers ever, but there's a lot there. There's a lot of content.
You mentioned, you know, getting picked up, dropped by labels, this is going to happen, it doesn't happen. A documentary that is all that Steve and I love is, I think it's called We Are Mother Effing Twisted Sister. Did you ever see that, Ray?
Yeah, I heard of it. I never saw it.
It's outstanding.
It's unbelievable.
Twisted Sister doesn't really mean much to my world, but it is such a great documentary. You got to see it.
But a lot of people don't realize that there. Like, they think, you know, your favorite band, they just think like, oh, they did it. They got signed and they're huge and they're famous. And a lot of people don't have any idea what some of us go through. And, you know, I did the hard road. You know, people think, yeah, October starts my 14th year with Korn, which I'm super stoked to still be in, and we're still around. And I mean, Fieldy told me we had a year in 07 when I got the gig. He's like, yeah, wow. We got another year left, and here we are, and, you know, still making music and soon to be touring when this whole virus crap's over. But you know, it's, people have no idea. So that's why, like, I always told myself, I'm gonna put a book together. It's gonna be about the realism of, like, you know, getting promised all this stuff, because they just think, like, you know, practicing and trying to get really good at your art is just one part of the whole equation, you know?
Yeah, and I think for a lot of artists, luck has a lot to do with all of it. I just saw on Twitter there was a story about how Eminem, there was somebody at the record label, I think it might have been Interscope, I don't know if that's the same record label you're on, but an intern came across Eminem's demo tape, and that's how he got discovered.
I'm telling you, man, it's a lot of that right place at the right time kind of thing. And I tell people that at my clinics and my teachings and everywhere, and they're like, oh, yeah, but you worked your ass off. I'm like, yeah, I did. I really worked hard. You know, I played 6-8 hours a day for I don't know how many years. But it is, you know, look, Army of Anyone, my band before Korn, if it wasn't for me being on the same management, you know, we were on the firm managed Korn, the firm managed Army of Anyone. And when I got with Robert Dean DeLeo, you know, I remember saying, wow, they got Korn. That's really cool. I've always liked that band. And I went to the Beverly Hills office one day, and there was a new Korn record, See You on the Other Side, sitting there. And I go, hey, can I grab a copy of that? And he's like, sure. And it was just, you know, never in a million years I would ever think I'd become in that band. But hadn't it be for our management being the same, I don't know if I would ever got a shot, because when they were having drummer problems, when the original drummer David quit and they had Terry Bozzio filling in on the record, they had Joey Jordison from Slipknot, they had Brooks Wackerman from Now Avenged Sevenfold, all these drummers were, you know, filling in. I was like, I told my manager, I go, what the heck's going on with Korn? You know, he's like, they're looking for someone permanent. And then the demise of Army of Anyone, I said, hey, man. And he goes, go up there and play, you know, Joey's last gig is in Seattle. Go up there and play a couple songs with him. I go, in the empty arena? He's like, absolutely. That's what I did. I played six songs. They said, welcome to Korn. And
wow.
There you go. Wow.
Well, and Ray, you also know that all you have to do is look on YouTube. There are virtuoso musicians. I'm not saying that, you know, they're a dime a dozen, but there are so many great musicians that will probably do nothing more than jam with their friends in the neighborhood because they eventually have to pay bills, and they may do it as a side thing for the rest of their lives. But I mean, really super talented people.
Oh, dude, I have a virtuoso buddy working at a coffee shop here in Nashville, and this guy can play circles around most guitar players out there. And he's I don't know if he'll ever, you know, see the light, because you don't know if you're going to be in the right place or get that break. And it kind of sucks, because I feel for these people. You know, when I'm on tour in whatever country we're in, I always go check out local bands, and I see stuff that just blows my mind, you know, and I say to myself, like, wow, I'm so lucky that I'm playing arenas right now. This poor kid, I don't know if he'll ever get out of club,
right,
you know, or whatever. So yeah, I feel for people, man. I do. Yeah.
I never knew how bad I sucked until YouTube came along. I thought I was pretty good.
Dude, it's scary, man. There's freaking people playing Tom Sawyer in their 10.
Yes! It's insane! It is insane. Well, listen, man, I'm looking forward to seeing your performances as well as everybody else's. And like I said at the top of the interview, this is an unfortunate reason for everybody to get together and do this, but nonetheless impressive and necessary. And, you know, it's a tribute to a guy who influenced, I mean, countless drummers throughout the world.
And he always will, man. His music will live on, and his inspiration will live on. That's what's great about this.
So it's the Modern Drummer Festival 2020 tribute to Neil Peart. It's going to be at 8 o'clock Saturday. You can go to livexlive.com. And we hope to see you in Philly live in person sometime in the near future, Ray, okay?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I can't wait.
All right, thanks for coming on. Ray Luzier, guys. Yeah. Take care. He's fantastic.
Nice
if you're not familiar, or if Korn isn't your thing, you can just type in Ray Luzier, which is spelled L-U-Z-I-E-R, on YouTube, and sit back and watch, because he's amazing.
Get the whole Preston and Steve Show or the Bizarre Files podcast at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.